So I'm going to do what's sort of unlike me, but I want to be able to see the timer so that we don't go over time. So I'm going to stand over here. I'm Harold Geller, Executive Director of AdID. See my panelists. So first in the audience, who doesn't know what addressable advertising is? Okay, we've got a good audience. This is a great way to start. But you know, Chris, Julian, why don't you just talk a little bit about your companies and what your interaction is with addressable advertising, and maybe a little bit of background.
Sure. I don't know if I need a mic. Can anybody not hear me? I'm going to blow some eardrums out. Okay, so addressable. So we obviously, so I sit kind of on the marketing end of Viacom. So we run kind of an internal agency along with a few other things that we do within the data science world within my group. And our brands are obviously buyers of addressable advertising when we're marketing our shows. Within the construct of some of the MVPD deals that we have, we also use addressable as proxy to sell to the marketplace as well. So both from a buy and the sell side, we are very heavy in addressable advertising holistically.
My company, Canoe, we do dynamic ad insertion into cable video on demand. So if you're watching a Viacom show on Comcast VOD, yes, and an ad plays out, that's actually going through our back end. And what we've been doing in addressable is we've recently supported a pilot on one cable operator with a handful of our programmers, and just testing to see if a national programmer can put an ad into VOD, and we addressable put it through the system. Technically, can it work? The answer is yes, so that's good. And now we're in the process of how do you scale that across all of our MSOs, full footprint, and bring that to all of our programmers. So really launching it out of pilot and bringing it to full scale.
So right in the two introductions, we actually hit a very important distinction that we hear. You know, we hear the term addressable advertising and we hear the term dynamic ad insertion. Is there a distinction or a difference? Is there a difference or different ways of saying the same thing?
No, they're very, very different. So dynamic ad insertion means kind of inserting it into a live feed, which for the most part in broadcast doesn't exist. Although there's a standard change next year, which will kind of lead to that. Addressable means you're kind of going one-to-one using data. Typically that's done on some level of scale. In most cases when you talk addressable, you're kind of assuming cable addressable. I'm assuming you're referencing. Obviously, digital by its nature is addressable, but I think that's different than I think when people think about addressable, they're thinking about addressable on cable. And that is kind of a household level insertion, which allows you to kind of reach a household with a specific message, which is very, very different. So DAI is a function, will help addressable, and addressable uses that, but they're not necessarily.
So they feed off each other.
They feed off each other.
Got it.
And I agree, the one difference I would say is for Canoe is dynamic ad insertion into video on demand. So yes, live, but in our case, it's into the VOD stream. Our whole business for the last 6 years has been, just thinking in the case of Viacom, I'm watching Teen Mom 2. That's pretty much how you're going to target on
great
that.
Great show.
Right? Just
by
like,
the way.
By the way, it's a great show. So really, the way you're going to target is kind of the dumb old way of linear television. It really is by show or by date and time, as opposed to now the addressable tests that we're doing and the pilots we're doing is, okay, are there left-handed bike riders in Manhattan who are watching Teen Mom? There's probably four of those, so you might want to target a little more broadly than that. But that's to us, that's what that distinction is.
And another distinction that's important is we've classically heard about addressable advertising and dynamic ad insertion in the digital world, in the online, mobile, over the top. But we've gotten into the world where everything is becoming addressable. You know, how many people here have heard of the new television standard, ATSC 3.0? Okay, so ATSC 3.0, which is the new television standard, is IP over the air. So when you're talking about your over-the-top device or your internet-connected device or your mobile device, that's receiving internet protocol signals. ATSC 3.0 is Internet Protocol over the air. Now we start seeing addressable advertising in the over the air space. And we start to, how does that everything is addressable world change the advertising industry? And how does it, you know, how do we respond? You know, how, for, you know, Canoe certainly focuses on cable video on demand today. And, you know, the question becomes, is that does that continue to be Canoe's play, or are there extensions to that? And then from the media standpoint, you know, how does everything as addressable change the way you look at addressability?
I'll take the first part of it. How we approach it is we have a quality controlled platform that's data secure. That's a whole bunch of good things, right? The quality level for what we've done within the cable plant is like way up here. And obviously there's some things in the digital world when it comes to privacy and compliance, and you know, you read all the press that, you know, your safety level, your quality level is down here. So we think that as the world progresses, that Canoe has a lot to bring to the table to say that, okay, you know, here's the bar. Here's what we need to have in terms of privacy. Here's what we need to have earlier in the day in terms of everyone in this room, in terms of stream quality and processes and all that sort of stuff. So we've already broadened the definition of what VOD is, where when we started this 5 years ago, it was set-top box cable VOD. Well, now we also do our quality assurance and everything we do over, say you're going to the Spectrum Reach app that's playing out on your Android and you're watching Teen Mom 2 there. Well, Canoe's doing our service assurance over that also. So we're coming at it from sort of the quality and bringing everyone up to this level, totally doing it within the cable plant. But again, earlier today with some of the folks that were here and showing what they're doing in OTT, we actually agree with a lot of those things that are there because it's about, you know, how does OTT sort of grow up and become the stable platform, the same that, you know, we've done within the cable plant.
Got it. We're going to come back to your assurance platform in a minute, but I want to hear how does addressability across on all devices or everything addressable?
Addressable in and of itself is a valuable commodity. Right? I mean, ultimately, the opportunity to kind of have a one-on-one dialogue, whether that's with a household or with an individual, I think is a very valuable opportunity for any marketer. Addressable everywhere is probably overkill, because I think, you know, there's just not enough real available data in the world to break it out, to have a real valuable conversation for every single marketer, and not every single marketer needs to have an addressable conversation for every initiative that they're doing. Right, so there has to be some variance because not everything is direct response, and so there's, you know, branding still has a very important you know, place in the advertising world, and I think, you know, addressability doesn't necessarily focus on branding per se. However, you know, in a world where you can be addressable, and assuming you have the know-how and the infrastructure and the data to you know, attack it in an intelligent manner, I think the opportunity to have the right conversation at the right time with the right individual is kind of the, you know, panacea of what everybody wants to achieve from a marketing perspective. You know, how that plays itself out from a financial perspective is where the challenge might lie. You know, addressability typically is a more expensive way to reach your consumer. And you know, there's a reason why it's taken a slow burn in the industry for it to grow, because it does cost. Now, once everything's addressable, perhaps, you know, that maybe doesn't come into play. But realistically, again, I think that, you know, having the option there is great. Whether or not you need it for every initiative that you're doing as a marketer might not always make sense.
Yeah, so someone had an interesting comment. I'm going to steal it from them, and I forget who it was, so there goes your attribution. But said, yes, branding's always going to be branding. You're always going to have your branding campaign. And said you should think of addressability as this, where just like today you have a national campaign, yet if you're a movie studio, you might want to just double down in LA and Chicago and New York, and therefore you're going to you know, double down in those geographically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, if I have a niche product, right? Like, you know, whatever it is, I have a movie that's aiming to target like you said, left-handed bike riders. Right. Great. Then
the left-handed bike rider.
Right. Very popular, apparently, segment. But like, you know, then great. I could kind of leverage that. I have the data. I know who they are, whether it's first party or somehow, you know, strange way you have a third party data set that fits that, then I could understand that. But like, for example, right, Coke has a national campaign going on, right, share a Coke with you right now. What's the purpose of making that addressable? None. Like, there's no value to that. Now, if they want to have a specific conversation with a consumer base that they're trying to reach with that message and they want to change the creative, because the other thing with addressable is that means you have to have creative that meets that. And creative is still very expensive. So having 1,000 different pieces of creative in addressable manner in the large linear space, I don't think is a realistic financial scenario.
Got it. So we focus a lot of our conversation in the, you know, in the media space on measurement. And a lot of our measurement is panel-based. And the transition to census-based measurement and to more broad measurement is important. How is the measurement ecosystem catching up to the addressable universe?
Well, addressable still has actually some gaps in measurement, if I'm being honest. But I think, you know, addressability should lead to looking at outcomes-based measurement versus large panel-based. So if I'm investing in addressable, I might be less inclined to worry about a GRP and more inclined to understand what data set I'm using, the audience, the segment that I'm using, the audience, and understand how that has affected direct sales, as opposed to looking at it in the traditional manner of just kind of a broad-based, panel-based measure. So I think as, you know, as we're doing addressable, right, we're doing addressable within our MVP deals, MVPD deals, and using, let's say, some of that for promo, right, we're looking at it in a little bit of a different manner than we are what we do kind of in mass. So, you know, it's going to be a different measurement criteria that you're going to use there. It's harder to measure that. And that's kind of still kind of manifesting itself and still kind of developing into what it is. But I could tell you right now, I have no problem measuring my linear easily. I have a very distinct problem measuring my addressable investments.
And again, if people have questions, please, you know, raise your hands and we'll make sure Garrett's back there with the microphone. Want to make this more interactive. This is more of a conversation for you guys to have with the panelists than for me to be asking them questions. Chris, you mentioned Canoe's quality assurance, what did you call it? Your quality assurance platform. There's some work being done on there that goes beyond just the quality of the ad going through, the quality of the streams and so on. Talk a little bit about what your assurance pro platform is doing with Ad ID and with ads in general.
Yeah. So we have this awesome platform that works great within the cable operator's VOD. And to your measurement point is we return who's ever buying back impressions to the ad, right? It's not panel based. It's not, you know, so. And our data is tight because it's within the cable plan. So in order for addressability, you have to start, we think in order to layer on addressability and all that, you have to start with impression-based, and that's where we're at. To now to add on about cross-platform, so other platforms even within VOD, or if you start to put in linear, in order to have that cross-platform measurement, we need to have Ad ID or some form of ad ID that's consistent. So I can keep track of it within the cable platform. So now if I'm watching an ad and I say, okay, it came on Teen Mom and it's Pepsi and it played out on my VOD platform. Okay, is that the reaching the same consumer or a different consumer that's even playing within the Comcast Xfinity stream? Or the Charter Spectrum stream, or the Cox Contour stream, right? I can do all that, but I can't do that unless there's a consistent identifier to the ad.
Sure.
So it can be done, but to date, majority of times, it isn't being done. And if it is, it's on the agency side, which is fantastic, right? I mean, that's part of the value of working with an agency, but all that is very manual and people and you know, things can go wrong in that process. That's our perspective on it, and we're working with partners in order to try to make that, you know, more efficient and more reliable. But it takes a village.
And so, Julian, same question to you. You know, the fact that we have this combination of linear and on-demand, and the fact that we don't consistently identify and describe ads, you know, shameless plug here, you know, but between 75 and 80% of ads that exist in the universe have unique ad ID codes. But then we still have between, you know, 20 and 25% that aren't. What's the downside, and what, you know, how do we get more advertisers using ad ID and building the case for getting more out there?
Well, as you know, we are big supporters of ad ID. I'm a big supporter of ad ID. I think that, you know, we need to do a more comprehensive job of getting advertisers to understand the value of the data that's coming back. Because I think, you know, not all advertisers at this point in time are mature enough to kind of gather that data, have an intel on how to kind of process it, use it, and then leverage it, right? I think the main thing, it would be an education factor, right? What are you doing now? What are you missing without it? And here's what you get with it. And here's the important things that will allow you, and what the kind of value it's going to, you know, turn for you for return on investment and for return on ad spend, right? Like, ultimately, you know, more and more, you know, the marketplace holistically is going a lot more towards, I don't want to call it direct response, but kind of outcome-based, right? And, you know, not that, again, I mentioned branding before, it's still, I think, important and where a lot of the dollars are, but I think even those advertisers realize that there has to be some kind of outcome, right? I have to be able to kind of measure the value of my investment. And without having all the information, you're kind of doing, you know, like 40-year-old MMM models to figure out whether or not you've actually, you know, gotten value out of the dollars you put in market. And, you know, that's not working for a lot of these companies. And a lot of these large traditional advertisers are getting destroyed by challenger brands, you know, especially if you want to talk to Randall Rothenberg about all that. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're getting killed by these challenger brands, and it's because they are kind of operating at a different level when it comes to data. They understand metadata, they understand how to use it, they understand how to leverage it, and that's a very big, big difference from what some of these traditional advertisers are doing. So I think it's much of as it is, it's just education, because education will lead them to changing and hiring different staff to accommodate the volumes of data that will come in, which will allow them then to optimize more effectively, work with their partners, whether it be an agency or whether they're doing it internally. And then, you know, that will lead to more advertisers kind of being invested. So I think the most important thing we could do, the most important thing you, sir, can do, is really education.
And you do, I mean, people are here today to learn and figure out what's new, what's out there, right? How can you, what I find is, so much of our business now is the fun part, the interesting part, is folks coming with a challenge. Hey, can you do this? I was wondering if this. I was wondering that. And you speak about attribution is what put it in my brain. Some people are like, yeah, we really wanted to find out about the effectiveness of this campaign. You know, how can we tie it back to real sales? You know, what sort of thing can you give us? I was like, well, I can give you a timestamp. I can tell you that ad played at 2:52 and 32 seconds in the morning. Was there a call
can
to
it,
your?
Can I tie that back?
Was
into
there a call to your call
search queries? Yeah, whatever it is,
whatever you want to attribute that to, like, I can do that. And they're like, you can? I was like, yeah, I can. So a lot of times, it you know, it's just a matter of like you said, just educating and probing that. You know, like, there's a lot of other possibilities out there, but. Again, a lot of folks are underwater. They have their day-to-day. This is what my boss told me to do, right? You know, you get all that. But the world of data, as we were talking about earlier, you know, a lot of options and possibilities have opened up.
Yeah, we're in the mix of a changing market, right?
Absolutely.
We're in the mix of a changing market. We're in the mix of functionally changing staff and who works at different companies, right? And this is kind of an evolution that takes time and requires, you know, like, significant change. And, you know, one thing I've learned in 20 years of advertising and marketing is that people don't really love change because it's not really good for their bottom line from a job perspective. But I think if you embrace that, if you take the time to kind of want to change, those brands that have done that, you see that they're still thriving in the marketplace, and those brands that haven't are underwater. And it's kind of easy to pick out who's who. And so at the end of the day, you know, the key is taking the time, energy, and effort to actually evolve.
So, Julian, Viacom is part of an initiative of several broadcasters called OpenAP.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. What does that do for the industry? What is it? What's the value to the ecosystem,
sure,
to the advertiser?
Sure. So I would put it out there. I personally do not work on OpenAP, but the value for the marketplace is pretty straightforward. So as a buyer, I can still speak about this with some level of intelligence. The first is when I come with a set of data, I use that same set of data across everybody in OpenAP. So that's first. So I don't have to go to every individual.
And who else is in OpenAP?
Well, there's Viacom, and then there's the other guys.
there's Fox.
Let them
and
advertise themselves.
There's Fox and there's
no,
Comcast.
No, there's Fox, there's Turner, and NBC joined.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we have a few others that are coming down the pike. But at the end of the day, it's supposed to make it easier for advertisers, right? You know, even as recently as 2 years ago, if I had a data set, I had to go to each individual partner and have a different conversation about what is a, we'll use auto intender as an example. Like, what is an auto intender? What is an auto intender to Turner? What is an auto intender to Viacom? What is an auto intender to Fox? Everybody has a different definition. Everybody might be using a different data partner. And that's challenging for the marketplace, challenging for buyers. So OpenAP allows you to come with one kind of standard of what that data set is, and then use that across everybody in the marketplace. I think that in and of itself is a massive time saver for agencies and for buyers. The second thing it does is it helps to kind of put and leverage some level of standard, right? So the one thing, and we talked about this before, the one thing we in the advertising industry tend to kind of suck at, minus Sim. Sim's fantastic. But short of Sim, we suck at kind of developing and holding to standards. You know, there's lots of, you know, varying bodies of organizations. Again, Sim, best one. But short of that, you know, we're not really great at putting standards in place and holding to them, because at the end of the day, everybody wants to have their special sauce. So in order for us to kind of, you know, do this more effectively, OpenAP is kind of a baseline for kind of setting standards, at least when buying from broadcasters, and specifically when buying data-driven, you know, buys. So, you know, that's a nice place to start, and I think OpenAP is going to evolve significantly over the course of the next few years. I'm sure at some point, you know, inclusive of, you know, things that you know, a Canoe does or whatever it is, and I'm not speaking specifically from insider intel, I'm just saying, like, you could see the path to where OpenAP leads to a different mechanism for how you buy, along with ultimately what data you're using to drive your buy.
Yeah, and we've, to exactly that point, I mean, when Canoe were sitting back going, okay, how do we now do these addressable campaigns that are in a pilot? How do we do that at scale? One of the questions is, what targets are we going to enable through the technology? And rose right up and just goes, well, why would we make those up? Why don't we use the OpenAP standards?
Right.
So as a technologist, that allows us to do the wiring much more efficiently, because the sort of the standard set of addressable targets have already been worked out.
That's right.
By
the,
these guys.
The goal
so thanks, Viacom.
Yeah. The goal of OpenAP is to make things easier.
Right.
Right. To make the marketplace work more effectively and take a lot of the legwork out of it. And so far, it's been quite successful.
So while we're on the topic of standards, there's a standard video ad serving template, and you know that's the nice thing about having a standard video ad serving template is that it is used by a variety of people. I know that Canoe is moving in the direction of VAST. The latest version of VAST has all kinds of new capabilities. What does, you know, firstly, the industry has not universally adopted the latest version of VAST yet, and we certainly have a way to go. How do we get there? What does a standard video ad serving template do for the industry? And what are some of the pressure points, again, back to pressure points, in terms of how to get it adopted faster?
Again, I'll answer from a technology, a wiring point of view, and I'll give the final result for most people in the room. Is our business has grown 20% quarter over quarter for like the last 5 years. And there's always a different reason why that growth has happened. Sometimes it's distribution, sometimes it's more programmers. The most recent reason is because of electronic marketplaces. private exchange electronic marketplaces. It just you because you made it seamless and easy for people to exchange in a private marketplace, we've seen more growth, more traffic happen that way. How did we achieve that? By a standard of VAST. So we've taken actually our traditional cable plant, which is a whole other QAM-based system, totally different system, and via a standard of VAST, opened that up to the FreeWheel digital system and to the Google Dart for Publishers system, and which allowed for these marketplaces, private marketplaces, to flow more smoothly and less friction. And the result is more impressions to the system, and therefore more money for everyone. Kind of like, there you go.
Yeah. So I mean, look, changing from a one standard to another on for any publisher is difficult. It takes it's an undertaking. It's costly and it's challenging. So I will admit that. On the other hand, there's no excuse for not adopting the new standard. The reality is this, there's a very, very simple way and a simple mechanism to do that, which is the buying community benefits the most from VAST. That's a very straightforward, as somebody who's done that and who helped push VAST into the market, will tell you, like, if you hold the dollars back, people will adopt so much faster. When you keep giving the dollars, then adoption takes at the time and at the leisure of the company. So that's the quick way to adoption, which is it has to be forced. So I'll give you a really great example. Video ad serving didn't exist, right, in 2004. 2004 was when I joined an agency. The agency that I was working at had a very large CPG client, largest one on the planet. Not gonna name them, but kind of guess who they are. There was no video ad serving. I got asked to make video ad serving. So I started with Unicast, which was the first video ad server. I then went to helped create Vindico, which became another video ad server, and so on and so forth, right? And from there came the standards and everything that came with it. The buy side benefits the most from VAST. So if you really want full adoption on the pub side for VAST, you need the buy side to push it.
Okay.
It's that simple.
In the last 2 minutes, come on. Somebody has to have a question out there. Garrett, do you want to get a question back there?
There's been a theme I've observed today, which is that we have greater access than ever to the tools of data storage, data analysis, machine learning, all of these groovy things, more data sets, just more we could be doing. And yet we're kind of seeing, I think, that the media and entertainment space specifically seems to be, in many cases, years behind other industries. And the sense I'm starting to get is that the role we need to surface in our organizations more and celebrate and build is the role of the data storyteller, right? It's a pretty common phrase. And yet, it's funny. We're in a highly technical industry that's also filled with tons of storytellers. And we can't seem to fully bridge this divide. And I'm curious on your observations as to, am I off base? Is M&E
you're not off base.
Figuring it out?
It's a talent issue.
It is right? A human resource issue at the end of the day.
We do not attract the talent, right, in nature. Now, everybody wants to work in the movies, but nobody wants to work in the movies as a data scientist, specifically, right? Everybody wants to be on television, but nobody wants to be a data analyst in television. Like, that's not what they go for. They want to work at Amazon. They want to work at Google. They want to work at Facebook because that's been presented as the sexy place. And I think it's the responsibility of companies like us, which I think we do a relatively good job, and I know I have a whole data science team underneath me, of taking the time to speak to data, to market to that community, to do the efforts, to go out to the colleges, and to really talk that. To your point, it's a human resource issue. That's simple, right? We have the need, we have the want, and we have the actual capabilities to get there. What we don't have is the talent. Right,
and I think,
or do we want to pay the talent? By the way, yeah. That's a whole different story.
Well, that's another story. But two, on the ad sales side, for years, agencies and for years, right? I mean, Steve's here, and 20 years ago, there were optimizers, and everyone's like, oh, there's optimizers. Oh, we have optimizers, and an optimizer was like the 60-year-old guy in a closet, but new as shit. Like cold, but it was one guy, right? You kind of knocked on the door and you were like, hey, can you help me out? So just like the rest of society, where now anyone can go in and make a website and someone can go in and publish, we need to, you know, let the data free and have people be able to ping it and query and those sorts of things. So I think it's always been there, but now we need to free the data. And I think that's where the industry's at.
And we're going to wrap up there, but it's an important point to think about. It's like, you know, to your point, we don't have the authoritative sources and the sources of knowledge for this kind of thing. And that's a very interesting way to end this panel.
But we should adopt that idea, and then we'd have more data coming in, and then we could have more reason for people to do that.
Works for me. Thanks, everybody.
I like it. Thank you, Harold. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Julian. Great stuff.